Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
What is going on, everybody? It is Chad Benson in for Greg Corumbus today. Jim Garrity is here, and we've, of course, got the three martinis. Jim, let's start first and foremost with the good, and there's some points for consistency here as far as what's going on with Al Franken, but it's more about the way that people are reacting to Al than anything else.
Yeah, look, you know, obviously most of our listeners probably know that yesterday there was a photo from the, you know, radio personality, sports commentator, former model Leanne Tweeden talking about a USO tour with Franken back in 2006. Some rather ugly tales of him attempting to kind of forcibly kiss her, putting his tongue down her throat, all that kind of stuff. And perhaps, you know, also notably a photo of him either pretending to grope or grope her while she was sleeping on that USO tour. Now, we kind of look at this like, okay, well, we've seen this giant revision of the, or, you know, liberals and Democrats saying, hey, wait a minute, maybe we shouldn't have defended Bill Clinton as adamantly as we did back in the late 90s. We'll talk a bit more about that in a second. But a lot, this is a great opportunity for liberals to say, okay, do you really mean this? Or is it just now that the Clintons are, you know, on their way out and can no longer do you any good and she's not going to be the next president of the United States, now you're willing to revise it? Well, a couple of voices are being consistent. I was kind of struck by the New York Times earlier today. It was Michelle Goldberg who wrote a column not that long ago saying, I believe Juanita, earlier this week, referring to Juanita Broderick, the woman who claimed Bill Clinton had raped her. And got to give Michelle Goldberg some points for consistency. She says, you know what, Bill, Al Franken should resign. And it's, she recognizes that, look, this is, she said, my first instinct is to say that Franken deserves a chance to go through an ethics investigation, but remain in the Senate where he could redouble his efforts on behalf of abuse and harassment victims. But she says that's likely to peter out and, you know, women with other stories about other members of Congress might hesitate to come forward. That horrifying photo of Franken will confront feminists every time they decry Trump's boasts of grabbing women by the you-know-where. Democrats have to worry about whether more damaging information will come out, and given the way scandals like this tend to unfold, it probably will. Now, the other interesting thing is that out in Minnesota, Al Franken's home state, the editorial board of the Star Tribune, by no stretch of the imagination, a right-of-center paper, really comes out and rips on him and says, let's be clear, the photo was never intended to be funny. It was a mean attempt to humiliate and denigrate a fellow USO volunteer who had the temerity to reject his advances. You know, and he basically says they never quite come out and say he should resign, but they point out that they've called for resignations in similar cases. Franken so far is accused of one incident that occurred before he took office. That does not excuse or mitigate the gravity of his conduct, which was despicable, but the story was still developing as this editorial was being written. Look, there was another woman who said that less sexual, but just that Franken acted like a maniac after they had an exchange on a talk show back in the 1990s. Over the years, there have been various tales of Al Franken having real temper issues. Look, we all get mad. We all have times we're not at our best, but it really sounded like he used to have a real hot temper and just would explode at people in ways that would leave them feeling threatened and, you know, that there's something wrong with them. Maybe he's calmed and mellowed, but it is worth noting that he was 55 at the top of this USO tour. So, Chad, I don't buy this idea. This is just a youthful indiscretion. And look, if we really want to take this stuff seriously, then perhaps, you know, there seems, you know, maybe something more than, oops, I'm sorry. There's got to be some sort of more serious consequence for behavior like this.
You know, Jim, I look at this and doing comedy and doing the things that I do on my talk show. I look at something like this. And by the way, Mrs. Tweeden has said she does not want him to resign. She just wanted to bring this to light. She doesn't seem to be, you know, that's not up for her. She said to decide. I look at this and I thinking, you know, you're around 50 or 100 people on that transporter plane. How close were they or weren't they? We spoke yesterday to somebody on the show, on my show, that actually was there. And they said, look, everything seemed to be fine. So I get it, though. In the climate of the Me Too world that we're living in right now, everything looks bad. And everybody in politics and in sports and in pop culture and in entertainment is rewinding in their brain. Is there a stupid picture out there of me that's going to come to light that's going to get me in trouble and cause me to lose my career? having a bad temper, let's be real, Jim. I mean, we work in the entertainment industry. I know several people I've worked with whose tempers are, if you think this is bad, I could tell you stories of people where we've had to replace doors and things like that. So, and look at Alec Baldwin, for goodness gracious. His temper is legendary. And so I just think that the snap judgment we make on people, whether it be Judge Moore, even though there seems to be a lot more smoke and fire there, that we want to prosecute everybody based on allegations. We need to remember we live in a country where you're innocent until proven guilty. And that's kind of where I've gone with this. But at least the New York Times and other people are coming out and trying to be consistent, because you've got to do that nowadays, because you can't look at a liberal and say, no, we're not going to prosecute you because you've got a D by your name, but this person's got an R by their name, so we're going to hang them in effigy and burn them.
It is. As we're having this discussion about the Clintons and things like that, look, I think a lot of people in politics were willing to cut a lot of slack to people on their side. And meanwhile, they wanted to grab the pitchforks and torches when it was on the other side. And I think people are kind of recognizing that that's not a just system and not a good way of evaluating that. Oh, by the way, there's also the strong possibility that if you set up a system like that, well, then it'll kind of be seen as purchasing indulgences. As long as you vote the right way and have the right kind of affiliation, you won't have to face consequences for your actions. So, mentioned Roy Moore in there, and that's probably a good segue to our bad martini.
Yes, indeed. And the bad martini is did Fox News poll? Did they get it right? Did they get it wrong? But it's not as far-fetched as, like you're saying, a lot of people, you know, in this day and age, nothing is as far-fetched as, you know, remember, Trump's our president. And if you'd asked people that 18 months ago, people say that's crazy. But, you know, that does bring us to our bad martini. And it comes from Hot Air and Fox's poll.
Yeah. So earlier in the week, the National Republican Senatorial Committee, which is basically banging its head against the wall and trying to figure out some way to get Roy Moore to withdraw as a candidate and figure out some way to have a less electorally risky Republican candidate running for that special Senate election down in Alabama. They had a poll that came out that had Doug Jones, the Democrat, up by 12. And everybody's like, oh, come on. You know, we know you're trying to drive Roy Moore out of the race. We're not sure we buy into that poll. And lo and behold, the next day, Fox News, which generally has a pretty good record in polls. I'm sure you could probably find one or two that ended up being pretty far of the mark. But by and large, they have a pretty reliable record. The sample size looks fine. The timing looks fine. They have Democrat Doug Jones at 50% and Republican Roy Moore at 42%. Now, look, obviously it's Alabama. It's a very heavily Republican state. Traditionally, a Republican wins a statewide race in the neighborhood of 65% to 35%. But Roy Moore's had a really brutal couple of weeks here. And I don't find it's not when the four women who came out initially, the second woman who came out with Gloria Allred. Look, I don't think it's crazy to think that a certain number of traditionally Republican voters are going to look at this and say, you know, if there's this much smoke, there must be fire. I just can't vote for that guy. 7% said they didn't know. 2% said they were going to vote for someone else or other. Look, this is not a safe slam dunk race for Republicans. And an already narrow 52-48 Republican majority in the Senate could very well turn out to be 51-49 if this Fox News poll is accurate.
And, you know, there have been rumblings that even amongst Republicans, Jeff Flake came out and said, I'd rather have a Democrat win that seat than Roy Moore. And the Republicans have already said, too, which I think plays into polls, that even if he won, that they're going to do everything they can to make sure he doesn't get seated because they don't want him around, which plays into people's minds, especially when you ask questions about polls. And it's interesting, but I think right now Roy Moore is, like you said, he's got a lot of problems. It has not been a good few weeks for Roy Moore. But the one thing I will say about Roy, though, he's been adamant about this. Like him, dislike him, whatever it is, he is one of the very few out there that are fighting these allegations and wants to do all he can to clear his name. But this poll right here, if Fox has you losing and you're a Republican in a heavily Republican state, you better start looking for Plan B.
Yeah, the observation also is that I don't know if this is if Roy Moore has ever used these particular words, but I don't think it's out of line to characterize his perspective on the race as he's on a mission from God, right? That basically he believes that this is his destiny. This is something that he is, you know, meant to do. It is very hard to persuade someone who believes that they are on a mission from God, that they should step down, that they should withdraw from the race. They're not going to worry about the polls. They're not going to worry about all that kind of stuff. So just an observation that this is, you know, Roy Moore does not seem like the kind of personality who can ultimately, you know, you sit him down, you give him a talk, you point out how bad the poll numbers look. He'd step back and let somebody else run in order to help the party and help the causes he believes in. I believe he thinks he is irreplaceable. And we're about to see on December 19th how that shakes out. So, yeah, good luck, Alabama.
I will always say this. Never, ever, Roy. First of all, you look at the polls. You look at what Trump and the whole nine yards last year. And everybody's like, see, you could say polls are they're not to be trusted. But, Roy, I will tell you this. Never, ever, ever write your destiny in pen. Why don't you write it in pencil next time? And finally, we move to our crazy.
For that matter, yes.
We move to our crazy in our three martinis. And finally, the Clintons are getting their comeuppance from the liberal media, who are taking a step back and saying, well, you know what? We're telling everybody they should believe the accuser, yet for years we destroyed the accuser. Maybe we should take a look at the way we treated the accusers of to Bill.
Yeah, this has been absolutely fascinating this week. It started out with a couple of columnists over at Vox. Matt Iglesias, who is not one of my favorite people, wrote what I thought was a very interesting, thought-provoking, and honest essay about how his views had changed and how he believes Bill Clinton should have resigned, and that he feels it actually had a really negative impact on the culture, that once Bill Clinton more or less got away with it, yes, he lost his law license for 5 years and he had to pay a fine out of the perjury claims, but let's face it, Bill Clinton was not going to go back to practicing law after his presidency. That all in all, that he feels like this may have enabled a great deal of sexually predatory men. This may have given them kind of a playbook of this is how you can withstand accusations, and that ultimately, as much as the country said it didn't want to enable this kind of behavior, that it really didn't have that much of a problem with it. If they liked you, they were willing to look the other way, not just with Lewinsky, but with Juanita Broderick and with Kathleen Willey and with Paula Jones. Well, here we are. Kristen Gillibrand, the Democratic senator from New York, who took Hillary's seat after Hillary resigned to become Secretary of State, now says he should have resigned after the news of the Lewinsky scandal came out. What's really, Bill Clinton might be a very different guy or seen differently in a lot of circles of the Democratic Party today, but he still has his group of initial supporters. And Philippe Raines, who was a longtime spokesman for Hillary Clinton and just one of the most impassioned defenders, you could say, just took on Twitter and he was in a rage. He says, over 20 years, you took the Clintons' endorsements, money, and seat, you hypocrite. This is an interesting strategy for the 2020 primaries. Best of luck. Now, what I wrote earlier this morning is that actually maybe this is an interesting strategy if Kristen Gillibrand wants to run for president in 2020, because the Clinton impeachment will be 22 years ago then. Chad, I hate to remind our listeners that we're getting older, because I know it doesn't feel like it wasn't that long ago. But Clinton's impeachment will be further in the past from year 2020 than the Vietnam War was in the 1992 presidential election. Right? I mean, this is kind of ancient history. So the idea that Democrats will say, oh, Kristen Gillibrand, you deviated from what we thought about Bill Clinton back in 1998. I'm just not buying it. And I think the ground is shifting beneath our feet. And I don't mind Democrats doing this. I do think it's kind of bizarre and fascinating that maybe this is the kind of internal fight Democrats should have had in, say, 1998, or conceivably even in 1992 with all the allegations about Bill Clinton.
Though,
they're having it now, many years later, arguing about whether Bill Clinton really should have paid a much more severe price for his actions than he did back then.
Isn't it also one of those things, too, where the Democrats want to move as far away from the Clintons and they no longer serve a purpose? You guys, you've done everything you possibly can. Your time is over. So now, because at that time, the ends justified the means, because the liberal media decided they were going to do everything they can to protect their person. And now there is no longer a use for you. And now you've become a liability. So we will throw you under the bus right now.
Oh, look, there's a lot to justify the more cynical interpretation. They've always said hypocrisy is the tribute that that virtue pays to vice. But I think it's the other way, that vice pays to virtue. I do kind of believe, like, when people don't practice what they preach, it doesn't mean that what they're preaching is wrong. Right. I mean, they kind of, The Clintons, you know, put the Democrats in an exceptionally difficult position. And I think the Democrats failed that moral test, right? I think they should have looked at that and said, you know what, Al Gore is going to make a perfectly fine president. Let's give him a head start. You know, President Clinton, it's time for you to step down and you know, head into retirement. And they didn't do that. And they basically did. And I've always kind of wondered how many Democrats in the back of their minds kind of had this nagging feeling that, you know, we're not standing up for the underdog here. We are going along with the smearing of women. One of the moments I remember very distinctly in the Lewinsky scandal, I was 21 or 22 years old at that point. He sent out his cabinet a couple days after the scandal broke to say that they believed him, that he never did anything inappropriate with Monica Lewinsky. I believe it was, Madeleine Albright, Donna Shalala, Riley and one or two other members of the cabinet. And one by one, they all just went down the line and said, I believe the president. I've always wondered if you hooked him up to a lie detector test. Would they have passed? Because look, it's not like Bill Clinton didn't have a history of all this sort of thing. And my sneaking suspicion is that deep down, they all knew that there was something going on between Clinton and Lewinsky. But the moment required them to, to have an unwavering faith in Bill Clinton. They went along with it. And I kind of feel maybe this is a two decades of guilt finally getting to be too much for the Democrats.
Maybe that is your three martinis today. We had the good, the bad, and the crazy. Solid fun, as always. My name's Chad Benson. I am in for Greg Columbus. He will be back in a week or so. I'm going to be in on Monday and Tuesday. And of course, then we've got the Thanksgiving weekend. As always, Jim, a phenomenal job. You knocked it out the park.
Well, thank you for joining me, Chad. Always enjoy it. And I will see you Monday.
See you Monday. You can join me, too, Chad Benson Show on Radio America Networks. And check me out at chadbensonshow.com. This has been your three martini lunch.